Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 568, Blitz Keys, recorded live on January 24th, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I am your co-host, Godzilla Keys.
Nice. If for anyone who is not with the live stream at the moment, there's a whole thing about having keys. So that's why we have Godzilla Keys tonight instead of Godzilla T.
We were having keys discussion before the game, or before the podcast. So.
Yeah, key discussions.
Yeah, we'll have some key discussions tonight.
Yeah, key discussions regarding the Halo War 2's Blitz beta, which we've been playing a bit of. We haven't had really much happening in news because everyone's busy playing the beta. Hopefully you are too. Hopefully people have been enjoying the beta. For me, I just actually started playing tonight before the podcast because I've been practicing for the Halo Bowl, which is actually taking place tomorrow as of this recording on January 25th. For those of you who are listening to this probably after the fact, I'm not sure if I'll get this edited tonight. I might, but if you're listening to this after January 25th and it's already come and gone and a champion has been crowned of the Halo Bowl, which you'll hear on the next podcast how we did. But we have one more practice tonight that we're running through. We have some things that we're still working on. Personally, I'm not expecting us to do fantastic. I think we'll do pretty well overall. But it's for fun, and it's to help raise money for Gamers Outreach. But we're looking just to have a good time. I think we'll have a couple of things that we'll work on tonight, hopefully strategize, but we'll get to that in a little bit. The big thing that we're here to talk about is Halo Wars 2 Blitz Beta and all of its goodness. So GT has had some time with it now, and I got some time with it on the press preview, and then I had a couple of games that I did before the podcast tonight. So everything, I think, is in line for us to have a little bit of discussion on what we think of Blitz so far. So GT, how about we start with you, since you are new to the Blitz mode, and you've had a chance to play quite a few games since we recorded our last podcast. So what's your first impression of the mode?
Overall, it's a fun mode. Now that I'm starting to kind of get used to the controls, it's a lot easier. The one thing I do not like is the way you select cards, at least on the console. It's really clunky. It doesn't flow very well. It's hard to get the card that you want easily. But other than that, all the rest of the controls, perfect. I mean, they're easy to pick up. They move smoothly. You know, there's very few incorrect button pushes. The only other thing is I really wish they'd separated the local and all units buttons, but I understand that they're limited on what they can use for buttons.
Oh, so it's the same button on the Xbox One controller?
Right. It's your right bumper. You tap it for local units. You double tap it for all units.
Okay.
You know, that I would prefer that it was like in the original game, which was left bumper was all units, right bumper was local units or something like that. I can't remember right off the top of my head, but they separated it on the bumpers. But with the extended menus that they use now, I can see why they did it, because they're using the triggers for other things now. Now your left bumper is your fast move across the map, and your left trigger is to bring up your card menu so you can pick your card, at least in Blitz mode. I don't remember what it was in regular.
So if I'm not mistaken, I believe, because the controls are a little bit different for Blitz, at least on the PC, just a little bit, not too much, but just a little bit. So I think maybe on the Xbox controller, maybe there's a little bit difference in the controls between the normal multiplayer and campaign and then the Blitz mode, I think. I'm not sure. I didn't use the Xbox kit whenever I was at the press event. I played primarily on PC, and that's actually what I have played my games on, which is on PC, and I'll probably play PC when the game actually comes out, mostly, unless I'm playing with people on friends on console. But RTS just works better on PC. It's a little bit quicker to do all the actions on PC, which is kind of a good and a bad thing, because then you have other people that are better with PC controls on there as well. Those of you who are actually really good at RTSs. But I'll probably switch back and forth between the two to play with friends on console, and then just to play on PC for those who actually are going to play on PC.
Yeah, you know, like I said, the control thing, that is the only thing, only real complaint I've got about it. You know, after you get a few games in there, it does seem that the player balance is pretty equal, because I've been playing against higher level people, you know, people who've got more time with the game, and I don't feel that I'm in a, you know, at a severe disadvantage, at least for the beta. Now, once the actual beta or the actual game launches, that might change, because I don't know. The one thing I don't know for the launch title is, are they going to have all the cards unlocked and then you just get cards to power them up? Like, you know, the first day, can you go in and actually have a deck and play? Or are you going to have to like play through campaign or, you know, do, you know, some challenges to get cards to go play in that game mode? You know, are they going to just give you one full deck, you know, one card of each for one leader or what?
So whenever you launch the game, you have an initial set of cards. So if you went into the beta and you looked at all the decks that you had, that's the deck that you'll start with whenever you actually get the final game. I'm not sure if you'll have three packs right at the start of the game. You'll probably definitely get one from playing the tutorial. And I would guess there may be an initial set of packs for you to unlock. I could easily see 343 making it to where how you started with the beta is going to be the same expectation you can get with having the three decks ready there to add to your current deck. And then for all the pre-orders, there's another deck that you can get. I think that is the Captain Cutter deck. And then there's additional thing for the tutorial, like we just got in the beta as well. So I'd imagine it's going to be similar to that. But you do start out with an initial set of cards, because each leader has a default deck, so you'll at least have those default deck cards to start with.
Okay, well, in that case, then you're probably going to have a pretty level playing ground right off the start. I mean, there will be some players that have advantages because of just random luck on card draws, but the card leveling system I like. It's not, the leveling system isn't one-to-one. Like, you get a Marine card, and then in the next pack you get another Marine card. It doesn't automatically level that card to the next level. You have to pick up multiples of a card to get that card to rank up in its power.
Yeah, some of them are like one or two to rank up to the next level, and then as you increase the rank, they get a little bit more. So at one point, I think most of the ones as they start off take either one or two to get to the next rank. And then as you rank up, maybe after you get like level five, okay, instead of taking two, it'll take three to get to the next level. And then it'll grow over time, I think. So there's a purpose to still keep on getting cards, because it'll rank up your units
it'll make your units even stronger. And to be specific, we are talking about the card ranking, not your ranking.
Correct.
As you level up and you get duplicate cards, those cards become more powerful. And, you know, I've got, I think, two or three cards that have made it to level two, which means they spawn in, they're stronger, they do more damage, you know, they are more resistant to damage, you know, just like Veterancy when in a standard match, as you play along and you keep a unit alive, it becomes stronger, it does more damage, it is more resistant to damage as well. I forget. There's three things that it upgrades, but it's I like that system. You know, it gives somebody a reason to drive for cards, because, you know, pretty much once you have the cards, then there's, you know, before I was like, it's, if they're permanent unlocked cards, what's going to drive people to continue to grind for packs or buy packs? Well, they made it where you could actually level up the cards. Now, in a couple of months or a month or so, if the people that are buying a bunch of packs, you know, with money, I can see where they could have a distinct advantage. because their units are going to spawn stronger. So if you have a lighter deck, you will be at a disadvantage. I'm not saying that you can't win, but you definitely have the game working against you.
Right. And it's not like you're getting power-ups that completely outclass you compared to other units. It's just it gives you a little bit more attack and defense and health for your unit. And as the levels get higher and higher, those changes become less and less. But you still get a little bit more of a boost. It's just not as much.
Yeah, it's not like having a standard sniper and then swapping it out for an Orphang. It's not like that. But it does make those units more difficult to kill. So I can see where buying the packs could give you an advantage. I would recommend that probably if you are relatively new to the Blitz or new to Halo Wars and you haven't really opened a lot of packs, I would definitely grind for as many packs as you want or you can get if you don't want to spend money and try to find somebody to play with, like in a 2v2. That way you have that teammate to help back you up when you come across a player with strong units.
Right. Playing with someone else is pretty important. I played my game so far just by myself, and I won one, but lost the first two. And actually, one of the guys on my team was AFK or something and dropped out. So it was 2-on-3 for a while, and then they got the upper hand before one of the players on their side dropped out too.
Yeah, last night I fired up and actually streamed some of the Blitz beta on my own personal channel. And I was doing one of the daily challenges. I can't remember what it was. I think I had to win, or I had to play two games as Atriox or something like that. But I just got back-to-back losses. I changed leaders to do the Decimus challenge, daily challenge, play two games with Decimus. And all of a sudden I started winning. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Apparently, the way I've got the cards laid out for Decimus worked better for me than the way I've got laid out for Atriox. But anyway, during one of those games, I'm just playing by myself, random teammate, looking at the string, telling, okay, you need to kill yellow and red, yellow and red, yellow and red. Because, it gets confusing when you get that many units all in one place. But at one point, me and my teammate were holding A and B, or no, B and C, and both of our opponents were gathering at A, because in the minimap, it does show you where the enemy is. It doesn't show you what the enemy has, but it shows you where the enemy is. So we're sitting there, and, me and my teammate, we're just kind of slowly building up our army for defense, and he takes a unit and puts it over by them and drops a scarab on them.
Nice.
And I see what he's doing, and I happen to look down at my hand. Lo and behold, guess what's in my hand? A scarab. So I drop one right next to his, and we just laid waste to him. And then the points maxed out, and the game was over. But, it was almost like we planned to just double scarab, just do double scarab. I don't think I could have planned that.
So one of the things in my latest game that I did right before the podcast, this is the one I actually won, is I think it's the Condor. That's the 301 for the UNSC, right? One of the opponents and then my ally, I did a quick match, so it was 2v2, but both of them had like dueling Condors at one point on the B point. So that gets pretty interesting.
Yeah, what I've learned is whenever you see that super unit pop in, just hit all units and run, because you're not gonna your chances of beating it are pretty slim. Now, if you have your own super unit and you choose to use it, you can drop it and they will battle it out if you want to hold the point. But any of your other units, I just recommend all units get them out of there and try to save as many as you can. That seems to work pretty good for me, because there have been multiple times people, the opponents will drop a Condor on a point that we're holding, and I'll just pull all my units out as fast as I can. Instead of losing all of them to the Condor trying to beat it, I just pull out, let it expire, and then go back and recapture the point.
Makes sense.
You got to keep your units moving because the Condor will chase you.
True.
The super units can be controlled. They are not fast units, but they can be controlled to, you know, move around the map anywhere that you can move units. So be aware of that. So if your opponent chooses to, they can chase you down with it. But if you keep your units moving, you can usually stay far enough ahead of him and just try to move away from his other units and try to be aware if they're trying to box you in.
I would cower in fear if for some reason the whole enemy team managed to coordinate three Condors or three Scarabs at once and hold each three control points. Mm-hmm. That'd be
it could happen.
Oh, dang it. At that point, it's like you either need to have something equivalent to help kind of take it back over after they're done with that, or you might as well be screwed.
The nice thing is if they pop that Condor, that is 300 energy that they don't have to build units. So that, depending on when they do it, they could have a pretty weak army at that time. I tend to focus on building an army, and I'll save that Scarab or the Condor for, you know, if they launch a massive barrage. And then I will drop it in to run cover while I, redeploy my army, or pull back a little bit and let the super unit work, soften them up and then come back in with my army. The way you play those cards, you got to be smart about it. If you're fighting an enemy that has a highly mobile army, make sure that you've at least choked off the escape points. Make sure they've got to go through some obstacles to get away so your super unit can work. Don't leave the back door open. Use that firepower to its fullest effect and be conscious that they might drop their own super unit on the same point. So, I'm just learning how to counter those really strong cards. And sometimes the best thing to do is just run away.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially when those cards, they're kind of time dependent too. Like they're not always out there, right?
No, they last, I think, 45 seconds or a minute, something like that. They're not out there that long.
So yeah, running in that case might be one of the better options to take and save your army. So whenever it's gone, you can push it back out and you can build up your army in the meantime.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. You know, at first I wasn't enjoying it so much because I was getting my ass handed to me. Pardon me. And, I wasn't real familiar with controls. It just all felt clunky just because I wasn't used to it. But now that I've played a few games and, things are starting to kind of gel with, okay, well, I know I need to have these kinds of units to have kind of a balanced approach to, attack a point. I want to make sure that I have at least an anti-infantry units. I want I want to be heavy on vehicle units as far as that can do good damage against vehicles, especially the freaking locusts. And then I want to make sure I got at least one anti-air unit.
I've started to, after I had the media preview, to have at least one detect unit in my deck so I can make sure I'm not going to be blindsided. Because there's actually one game I had tonight where the other team had scorpions that were cloaked. And that's just like, okay, that's not good to have. That was one thing I learned from just during the media event, is having something of a detect. And I think another thing too is if you end up running with a team, you can probably prioritize roles. So have probably one person be more defensive and collecting energy, and then you can have another one being more offensive and trying to capture points, and then another one acting as a support role. So I could see a lot of different playstyles coming out with teams going in and playing Blitz.
Well, that's pretty much a standard strategy even for, 3v3 OG Halo Wars. One of the more popular ones was two Arbiters and a Forge. And the Forge basically supplied the two Arbiters to pop Scarabs as fast as possible.
Huh.
That was one. There's several different combinations, and you can look them up on YouTube. They're still out there. But when you're doing a 3v3, you can kind of split up. Okay, you're doing anti-vehicle, you're doing anti-air, you're doing anti-infantry, and you know, your extra money goes to supply the other two teammates. Because building, you know, anti-infantry units is relatively inexpensive, so you're going to have a surplus of money, for not a better term, but a surplus of money to give to these other units or to your teammates, which are building more expensive units because vehicles and air are more expensive units. But as far as playing Blitz, this kind of a pro tip, and I got this one from Luke the Notable. You can check out his YouTube channel. He's got deck build guides up already. And when you go to collect energy from the drop pods, take your unit and click near the pod. Don't click on the pod like you want to attack it. Just click it to where your unit goes next to it. You know, as long as your unit is near it, it will attack the pod. And the reason you do that is so once the pod's destroyed, the unit is already close enough that it will collect the energy. Because if you...
That makes sense, yeah.
If you click on it, it will attack it at range. And then after it destroys it, you have to click it again to tell it to go pick up the energy. So just, you know, click near it. Don't click on it.
That's actually a very good point.
Yeah, I thought so too. I started using it last night when I was playing. And it does make energy collection a lot easier. Because you can... You know, you can kind of set it and forget it. You know, you get the unit going that way, and as long as you don't like hit all units to bring him back, you're good.
That's a good point. Very good point.
The blue team, I think they need to alter the shades of the blue because it's really easy to confuse the units. I was clicking on a Marauder last night, and it wasn't even my Marauder.
Uh-oh.
Why aren't you?
So it was one of your teammates?
Yeah, it was one of my teammates' Marauders. I'm clicking on it, trying to get it to go get energy, and of course, it's not working.
Lol.
That could just be a me thing, too. But I mean, if you're on red team, it's pretty obvious difference. You have red and yellow. They're pretty easy to tell apart.
Okay. I didn't know the blue ones were...
Well, you have your regular Halo blue, and then you have like a teal.
That is true. Yeah, the red ones do offer a little bit different color, right? Well... So it's blue, teal, and green, right, for blue team? So is it just something that the teal and the blue get mixed up?
Yeah, I don't know if I just forget what color I am or if I'm just not seeing the color right. But I've noticed whenever I play on blue team, I have a hard time distinguishing my units from my teammates' units.
Got it. Might want to put that on the feedback forum.
Yeah, I definitely going to be putting those two things in the... feedback form.
Nice. So one of the things for me with playing the Blitz beta so far is I find that the starting strat is kind of a good key thing to really help you get a start. So I know for me, whenever the game first starts off, I always send my Hornet or my air vehicle that I have or whatever vehicle to Charlie. And I know I'm kind of giving away a strat here, but I send it to Charlie to at least claim it. I'll send one of my ground units to Bravo, and then I will leave one unit behind until the first energy drop happens, and then I'll go take that unit to the energy drop.
I do something similar, except for I tend to watch the map and see where the other teams, you know, where the opponents are going, and I'll send my stronger unit to whatever plate they're going to just to kind of help hold them off from capturing the point. Then I'll send one of my infantry to the general area, the general area where the energy usually spawns. And then my last unit I would send over to, you know, either B or A, whatever plate it happens to be closest.
Okay. Because if you get, at least for me, if you get the first set of spawn or the first set of points, so if you go... actually get the points, you start capturing points first before the other team. And so far I've found that strategy to be somewhat successful in at least kind of getting the first few points. So the very first game I played, we got 7 points at the start and then we didn't score any more points afterwards.
Yeah. I've had games like that.
We got steamrolled. So getting that quick out strat is pretty good to at least get an initial start up, and then you have to be able to keep the points too.
You know, a lot depends on, you know, because I've been playing 2v2 A lot depends on which way my teammate goes. You know, if my teammate is headed towards the same plate that the other team is, you know, I'll change my strategy up and try to move my units to the unpopulated plates, you know, just to capture the plate. You know, it doesn't always work, like, you know, because they have, you know, there are two teammates too. So you gotta account for the teams. But, you know, I just try to send one unit over to the plate they're trying to capture just to try to delay them capturing that plate for a little bit. I don't do it every time, but, you know, I try to do it more often than not. But I do always try to, if I think about it, try to send a unit over into the general area where the energy spawns. That way I can get to it faster when it does drop.
Sounds like a pretty solid plan.
It pays off from time to time.
Yeah. So for those in the chat who are watching us on Twitch right now, if you guys have any strats you want to throw up, go ahead and do so. But we got one from Laird, and he says, put an anti-air artillery unit on the ridge above Alpha or Charlie, and then that actually keeps the other team off of either Alpha, and then if you're doing the one off of Charlie, it keeps the other team off of Bravo. So it's just kind of another little annoyance that will make sure that you kind of can keep them at bay a little bit. Another thing I do is whenever there's a major point that's being contested and we're holding a point, so like say B is the one that's being contested, which is usually the one that gets contested the most I've seen so far, and I have Alpha, I'll always leave an infantry group or a Hornet at Alpha, and then I'll send all my units to Bravo, and that way if they try to attack Alpha, I can see the enemy coming. And I can also use Alpha as a reinforcement point instead of having to spawn them either into the fray of battle at Bravo with the fatigue, or having to spawn them back at home where they'll have full health. So it's a quick way to put them out there, and they're still spawning with fatigue, but they're there and they don't have to travel so far from home base.
Right. Yeah, whenever I can, I use kind of that same strategy that Laird's mentioning. With locusts, because they will attack at long range. Yeah,
those have been annoying to me.
You know, I can park it where it, not necessarily lighting up the plate, but if anything goes into the plate, it will automatically start attacking it. And they have a lot of health, so, you know, they last a while, so it does give you a chance to double back and get units back over there.
Locusts are a pain from my games that I've played so far, and then when they've been on the enemy team, because they actually have some pretty good range. I'll have units that are just kind of sitting out there, and then all of a sudden they'll just get attacked, and they won't be attacking back because they're out of range.
Oh, one of my favorite strats from the original Halo Wars was a Locust Rush.
Oh, jeez.
In my prime, I think I could get Locusts out in under 6 minutes.
Wow.
A full pop of Locusts. I can't do it anymore because I've completely forgot my build order. But, you know, that is also dependent on having at least one generator on the map. So, you know, I can't do it on every map. But, yeah, those locusts are... and the nice thing is they're pretty much good against everything.
I think the only thing they're not good at or great at, I think that isn't the infantry that's yellow on the card, or is it the vehicle, the ground vehicles that's yellow on the card? I think air vehicles is good.
I know it's not ground vehicles because it was tear through ground vehicles. I don't know.
Okay.
Let me look.
Yeah. So I honestly don't know.
I will just fire up Halo Wars and find out right now. But anyway, I like having locusts. Whenever I have one pop up in my hand, it gets played. I've even been known to shuffle the deck a couple of times just to see if I can get it to pop up back to back.
Nice. I actually did use a shuffle one time in the latest game I did for, I think it was my last game before the podcast tonight. I had all cards that were 100 or more, so I ended up shuffling them so I could get a lower cost card.
Yeah, I've done that once or twice because it'll come up with, you know, of course, the Scarab and my leader power in the deck, and, you know, I'm trying to rebuild my army, so I'll go ahead and reshuffle so I can get lower cost units in there.
And then I don't think I've ever used the home base to heal a unit.
I have a couple of times. mainly because I was recruiting from a super unit and I was going by home base anyway. So I just pulled them in, let them sit there for a little bit and moved on.
Okay.
But, you know, as a regular thing, no, it's not something that I do. I would probably do that with fast moving vehicles like air vehicles or, you know, stuff like that. You know, things that can get across the map relatively quickly. You know, infantry units, generally they're low enough cost that I just let them go and just you bring them up, just get a new one. Locusts are fair against infantry vehicles and poor at air. They are actually they're an anti-building unit. They're actually designed to kill structures.
Okay.
But they work really good against pretty much everything. The air they do have a weakness for just because of the speed that air units travel at. You know, the air units can move around and the locust, it fires not as slow as your scarab, but it does take some time to get the beam to move and it doesn't track very well.
Huh, I'll have to try that. I know in one of my games, I sent out a trooper hornet to take out a locust, and it actually managed to take out a full locust, and I still had about 33% of health, and I started attacking another locust that was on the control point, so it did actually do pretty well.
Yeah, if you can keep the unit moving, you can actually keep it from going as bad, you know, losing as much health.
Yeah, that's good. The other thing with some of the other, vehicles and units too, which I haven't had too much. I kind of mentioned this earlier, is just the stealth units. Now, I haven't really used any stealth units. I'm kind of a very offensive guy. So do you use stealth units in your builds?
Not on purpose.
Okay.
I mean, the only stealth unit I can say I have is in Captain Cutter, the Nightingale. I do have one of those in my deck. Which, you know, can hit the Y ability and it cloaks your units from the enemy units. So, you know, that I do that. But as far as just a cloaked unit, like a cloaked sniper or something like that, I don't think I have one in any of my decks.
Okay. I think I have one in my Anders deck. And maybe one or two in my Shipmaster's deck.
Yeah, I haven't built my Anders deck yet. I just haven't done it. Matter of fact, we're sitting here talking about this, and I'm editing my Cutter deck right now.
Nice.
Put my sniper in. You're talking about, you know, cloak detection. I'll put my sniper in. Yeah, I don't use cloak units other than the Nightingale. You know, that's the only one that I use.
All right. I don't remember what my decks were, and I don't want to open up the game while I'm running the... do the settings go back and forth between Xbox One and PC right now?
I don't know.
No, there's one way to find out.
I've installed it on my PC, but I haven't actually run it on my PC yet. So,
okay.
I mean, it's supposed to be cross-platform. You know, your save information is supposed to go both ways, but I don't know if it does that in your beta.
Okay, Laird is saying yes, so I'm guessing it does.
Yes to our question or the question in the chat?
I think yes to our question.
Like I said, I haven't actually played with the PC version yet, so I will have to verify that.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things that 343 posted with announcement of the Prima Games guide, which we actually have a couple codes to give away that we'll give away here in a minute on the podcast. But they have a couple of things in here with a few little tips on just a little bit of preview on what's in the guide. So one of the things that they have starting right off is that whenever you have your hand out there, you have four cards from a 12 card deck that you're playing, and then they have the energy, which you kind of talked about already, and then the cycle is a cost of 5 energy, and they kind of detail a little bit of the leader restricted cards and how they're used. So Cutters is a mid to high cost unit that have kind of an offensive capability. Isabellas are more for distracting enemies and dealing heavy localized damage. Anders are cost-effective, but heavily defensive. Aatrox has very defensive strength, stun denial, and then area of effect attacks. Decimus has buffing units and offensive support units. And then the Shipmaster has units that focus on speed and efficiency and being able to kind of sneak into the enemy's units. That's kind of the different leader-restricted power cards that you have. They have kind of a rule of thumb up here, which is having a balanced deck of 10 unit cards and 2 power cards. And you can obviously have more power cards if you want, but you want an evenly distributed amount of cost cards. So if you have some low-cost cards that you need to pull out and deploy, you can do that. And then you have some higher-end cards for when you have enough resources to comfortably pull those out.
I'm sitting there going through the decks, and I found the Blood Fuel Locust. I like this description of this one. So this unit has special weaponry that steals health from its enemies equal to the damage dealt on it. And then under shields, this unit has energy shields protection that absorbs damage and regenerates when out of combat.
Interesting.
I can't wait to unlock that one.
Which one was that again?
Blood Fuel Locust.
Ooh, blood fueled. That's disturbing.
Oh, I do have a detect. I do have a detect in my cutter deck. The Reaver shields and detects.
All right.
So apparently there are detect units that I didn't even know I had.
Interesting. Well, so that's a detect unit. It's not necessarily a cloak unit.
No, it's not a cloak unit, but I do have a detect unit in.
Yeah. So that's good to have. I would almost say that it's good to have a detect unit in your bank of cards. Unless you're playing with teammates and you have specific roles, and maybe you'll be okay with going without any of the detect units. But if you're playing by yourself, definitely have one in there. If you're playing with teammates, then make sure you have teammates that are going to be able to support you with that.
Ooh, Watchtower. Wow. I haven't really gone through a lot of these cards, so I'm finding these cards and like, I like this.
Yeah.
I guess I really need to browse these cards more.
There's a lot of them to go through. For those that are interested and maybe haven't, well, everyone should have access to the beta now, so you can go through and look at all the cards and details. But if for some reason you don't want to boot up the game or are lazy, we have a video that has all the cards that are currently available in the beta for you to scroll through and see what each one of them does and what abilities each one has.
I like the way they made the units look.
How do you mean?
The actual appearance of the units. And, you know, in game, they actually look, a scorpion looks like a tank. It's not this kind of greenish red blob on the map. You know, with the fidelity that they can get with the Xbox One, it just, the units look a lot better. You know, there's a lot more detail to them.
You're talking about in the pictures or the units whenever you're playing them on the field?
The units when you play them on the field.
Okay. I mean, they do have definitely a better fidelity on the than in the original Halo Wars.
I mean, you know, just the appearance of the units is, it's improved even since the first beta. Like the flamethrowers, for one thing, they don't look as much like a bubble or a bunch of bubbles stacked together. You know, you can actually kind of see the Marine in the flamethrower outfit, so.
Well, newer generation console, you have a lot better graphics.
No, I meant, you know, from the first beta for Halo Wars to this one.
Oh, you know, gotcha.
They've made a few tweaks to the units themselves, you know, got a little bit more detailed with them. You know, they're looking a lot better even from when they were, you know, from the first Halo Wars 2 beta.
Gotcha. Now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, it does seem like they've kind of made a improvement on that. So, yeah, you're right.
I mean, the brutes look a lot better. Well, the hammer-wielding brutes look a lot better. They kind of looked pretty plain in the first beta. You know, there wasn't a lot of detail to them. I mean, you could tell it was a brute with a hammer, but it wasn't super detailed. But now you look at them and, you know, they really stand out, especially when you zoom down in and, you know, watching them attack an energy core or something like that.
I actually haven't tried the zooming in part yet to look at the detail. I should try that.
I mean, generally when I'm playing, I don't, because, you know, I want as wide a view as possible so I can see what's coming.
Yeah. I think isn't that the default view, though, is almost all the way out?
Don't remember. No, actually, I think when I first fired it up, I had to zoom it out because it was too close to the units. The first time I fired up the game. But I think after that, it remembers where you were. Or maybe I'd pushed forward on the stick or something. I don't know. I know I don't have to adjust it. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, when I quit the game and come back in, it doesn't go back to something. It's where I left it. So that's nice.
So I don't know if there's anything else really to kind of go over. I think we've kind of discussed a lot of the stuff that we've had from the beta, and we just went over most of the little things that they put in the guide, or like the little guide description. A couple of the things that they say is if you can't control a point, contest it, because then no one's getting points off of it. Make sure that you're collecting all the enemy. Make sure you are using control groups to help in 1v1 matches. And they even, actually, there's a note in here which Laird mentioned a little bit earlier. There's a cliff overlooking each of the map's control zone. If your army contains artillery units, try to place them on the high ground. And with that done, we'll go ahead and work on giving away a code here for those in the stream. We don't have too many people, but I think we have enough people to give one away. Let's see, who do we have in here? If the viewer list is going to work, does not look like it's going to work right now. So
I see two.
All I see is moderators.
I see Confeld and Laird. I don't know if Teabag's still in here or not. Sound off if you're in the chat.
I guess between Confeld and Laird. We got a small audience tonight on the Twitch stream. A really small audience. Regardless, Laird, I want to win for once.
Confeld is here.
Might just do this with a coin flip. Here, Laird can call heads or tails. How about that? So I'll go ahead and flip and see what he says. All right, I've got
call
one
it
result.
In the air, Laird.
Puts on Pin's mask. He's going to try to channel the luck of Pin's. Heads, and it is heads. So Laird.
Hey, Laird wins.
There you go. I will DM you a code for the guide a little bit later. We'll have more codes to give out, and we'll have some codes that we might be giving away on the Halo Bowl stream tomorrow as well. We also have some physical guides that we'll give out, probably over social media, and maybe one next week. But something else to note, too, is that we are still doing our submissions, I guess, contest or so. Yeah, contest. And we're going to be buying one of the new shirts, one of the new Jinx shirts. And actually, I got a care package from Jinx yesterday of their new Halo Wars 2 gear. So I'll probably make a video about that stuff this weekend. But for those of you who send in a submission to our submissions email, which is submissions@podtacular.com, write in your best gameplay or story that you have from the Halo Wars 2 Blitz beta. It could be a funny moment. It could be a successful victory. It could be just a hilarious or abysmal failure or defeat. Anything that's Halo Wars 2 Blitz beta story-wise related is acceptable. So we want people to start sending us stuff to discuss on the show. So we figured one way we might be able to do that is if we have people actually submit stuff for a chance to win something. We'll see how that works. The submissions are due by 8 p.m. next Tuesday. So 8 p.m. On January 31st, right? Yeah, 31st. And whenever we get to the podcast, we'll go ahead and pull out a submission. We'll read the submissions on the show, and then we'll pick a submission to get one of the shirts. And then we'll contact whoever wins, and then we'll figure out which shirt they want, figure out the size, and then we'll send it out. That should be all
get to send
them. Fun. Yes,
get free to stuff. Send as far as free stuff, this relates to Primer Guides. I was on their website, and they offer e-guides. Yesterday, I was on their site, and they had the original Halo Wars e-guide up for free. Now, I don't know if that is because I already owned an e-guide or not, but I would definitely check it out.
You know I'm checking right now.
Just head over to their website. If you have a login, you're going to have a login to get the guide so they can mark it as your property. But what I did is just in their search box, searched Halo and pulled up all their Halo guides. And the original Halo Wars was up for free.
Yeah, it's still there. It's for free.
So if you're new to Halo Wars, or if you're old to Halo Wars and want the guide, here's a way to get one for free if you know, you don't have to have a hard copy.
Yay! I just got it. So it's still up there for free as of January 24th. Hopefully it'll still be there, but it is there.
But, you know, something you can check out.
Which yeah.
Reminds me, I need to find the hard book for that.
For the Halo Wars one?
For the original Halo Wars, just for my collection. That and the Combat Evolved one.
I think we talked last time on which ones we had and didn't have, and I think Halo Wars was one I didn't have either, the physical one. But, I mean, having the electronic version is at least a start. And since we have the definitive edition, this actually works pretty well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, while I was on this website, I also saw that they also offered, I think it was a GameStop exclusive, a Spartan Ops guide as well. So I might have to do some research into that one and see if that's something I can come up with.
A Spartan Ops one?
Yeah, one that was just on Spartan Ops. It's not available to purchase, but they do show it as as something they sold.
Okay. Did it include the second half of the season?
I don't know. They don't put any information on it. They just list it. You know, you click on it, nothing happens. They don't have any information.
Well, that sucks. Except,
yeah. It's, but at least it wasn't working for me. Maybe the link was bad, but I think it was something that was exclusive to GameStop. So I have to do some digging around and see if I can find one just out of curiosity.
Let me know what you find, because I'd probably be interested in that too. Very, very interesting.
I find that the strategy guides are really helpful when it comes to achievement hunting. By the way, if anybody's interested in being in a particular production, let me know and we will get you in on an Achieving Halo episode. I know I've been slacking on it, but life gets in the way and schedules have conflicted. So I would like to get back on that and try to get this done. You know, try to get Halo 5 done before the end of winter, or maybe before the end of spring. So we can get those up and get them on there. And so I can start working on the Halo Wars, and then also get back on working on Master Chief Collection too. Cause I know that I've had people request, runs through, Halos 2, 3, and 4. So, and of course there's ODST.
Yeah. And now we have Halo Wars 2. So do one for Halo Wars and Halo Wars 2. Yeah, we need people to help us out with that. So if there's any weekend that you're free and available to just kind of hop on for an hour or so and help GT with doing the videos, then it's definitely something that we would appreciate help with. You'll be part of a Podtacular production, and it's something that we actually want to get done pretty badly. So help us, please. You're our only hope.
Yeah, and the reason being is, a lot of the achievements in Halo 5, they are co-op based. You can cheat it and use the AI as co-op, but I'd much rather play it with live people.
It's just more fun too that way.
Well, yeah, it's more fun, and it helps people get the achievements that they may not necessarily have. The episodes that we've come out with so far, each level there's been somebody that didn't have one of the achievements. Each person didn't have one of the achievements that we went through, so. Everybody pretty much got an achievement. So, if nothing else, I can help you achievement hunt.
And now there's all the new ScoreTech achievements too.
Yeah.
Which I need to go through and get, because I don't think I have any of them. And for some reason, I was checking my achievement list the other day. It didn't count one of my heroic co-op missions. So I actually don't have the achievement for completing every mission in heroic co-op or more. And even though I've played through the whole game, co-op heroic with people.
Yeah.
I need to do a full run through of that again and figure out which one didn't get saved.
Hit me up if you want to join in.
Yes. Hopefully I'll be able to join in on one of those too. I was actually on Fraggin' Fridays last week too, for those that were playing with us, and we had a pretty sizable lobby.
Yeah.
We
had a large enough lobby. We had to go into customs because none of the playlists would hold us.
And what was the one Mantis one that we did that we opened the party and we should have had the party closed?
Oh yeah, Night of the Mantis.
Yeah.
Apparently that's a pretty popular game right now, because we went and let's see, I think at the time we had nine people, and I limited the lobby to 16, opened it up, and I think before the first Mantis spawned in, we had 16 people in there, which is way too many people for that particular game type.
The other part, too, was whenever we had the rounds done, people were just going and buying the weapons without being able to coordinate with us. And of course, everyone that we were playing with that night, we were coordinating. Okay, it's like, wait and get this weapon. And then all the randoms that weren't with us is like, nah, let's just buy the first available thing. And so much for strategy.
Yeah.
Hopefully next time we can get another big party like that and actually go through and play that and see if we can beat it on whatever the, I guess, heroic difficulty is.
Yeah. I think the key to that one is a smaller group. I think 8 people is probably about the max. Because with 16 people, you just don't have enough holes to, or enough windows to shoot out of.
But does it take effect on how many mantises spawn with how many players are on the map? Or is it the same? I would assume it's the same amount of waves, right?
I think it's the preset. I don't think the number of players alters the difficulty.
So even if you had more, you could have people standing back.
Well, the problem is there's nowhere for them to shoot. Because if you get 4 people in each window, seeing that it's a free-for-all, the people in the back, it keeps trying to pull your aim down. And especially when you start pulling out like chain turrets and stuff, if you pull out a chain turret, you can't shoot over the people in front of you.
I'm thinking of something where you have the 4 people in front, and then you have people with power weapons behind you if they have like the beam rifle or the binary rifle or rocket launcher or something.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't think I'd want a rocket launcher behind me with the auto aim.
I think it's doable. I mean, of course, you have to coordinate it really well, but I think it's probably doable.
But like I said, I think 8 people is the max for that. That puts, maybe 10, but that would give you, 2 people up front on each window and then 4 people in back with, range weapons like sniper rifles or rail guns or stuff like that. You could have turrets on either side of the window. That would allow the turrets to have a clear field of fire, and then everybody else can shoot between the players. But 16 is just way too many people. There is just not enough space.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we had fun. We played Prop Hunt, too.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It'd be cool to just continue to play that over and over again, and then like eventually learn where all the props are and like try to figure out, like, you'd be able to spot anything that's out of place.
If you are subscribed to our Twitch channel, head over to our recent videos and you can scroll through the game night on, when was that? The 20th. And we played a game of Prop Hunt and I played a shelf.
You played a shelf.
I was a shelf. And I could not, it was all I could do to keep my mouth shut. Because I had 2 or 3 people walking around me, hit the tree behind me, hitting the other shelf directly across from me. Another person actually Spartan charged me, and it moved me, and I just about lost it. Nobody actually found me, but I actually got hit, I think, 2 or 3 times. I think somebody melee'd me a couple times, and somebody Spartan charged me once.
Oh, gosh.
And I actually lived. I was holding my breath. I couldn't believe that I actually survived that round. I thought for sure when I saw him come Spartan charging at me, I thought, oh, he's going to nail me and I'm going to go, the mongoose is going to start smoking or something.
Oh yeah. Okay. I remember that one now. That's right.
Yeah.
Cause when I died, I switched over and watched the stream and like, oh, you are sneaky. So no, you did well on that one. That was good.
Yeah. And, That's the bad thing about playing that kind of that type of game and streaming. Anybody in the lobby can just fire up the stream and see where you are because the delay isn't that long. But the people in the game were honest and they didn't look at the stream until after they were dead or after the round was over, or at least after I was dead. So yeah, everybody was. They didn't cheat. That was nice. I did think of something, and it dawned on me. I should have done it that game night as well as use the new spectator mode or commentator mode or
the observer mode.
The observer mode. Yeah, that's what it was. We had a game. We played a game of Rochambeau, and we had odd teams. We had 9 people at the time. And I didn't even think about it, but I could have switched to observer mode and, you know, just went back and forth between the 2 teams to kind of show everybody on the stream what was going on. And then the teams would have been level. But it turns out that the in that particular game type, honestly, having fewer players is an advantage.
And it's round-based, too. So, yeah, it kind of played in the favor of the team that didn't have quite as many players, at least at the start. It was one of the
things. Not to mention they were getting a lot better weapons than we were, too.
That's true. We got better weapons at the end. I think I eliminated the whole team at one point with a fuel rod or a rocket launcher.
Yeah. I think we wound up winning 2 or 3 rounds, but the other team pretty much cleaned our clocks. But it was a lot of fun. I was happy for everybody that showed up. I hope Dust can show up more often.
Yeah, me too. I might have to work it out with the girlfriend of trying to do at least once a month on doing it for Friday nights. So,
or just bring her up to speed and she can join in.
So we were going to play Minecraft this weekend. We didn't get around to it, but hopefully we will be, because that's what I'm doing to kind of get her used to playing on a console. And Minecraft is a pretty safe environment for introducing someone to how to use a controller.
Why don't you just let her play Halo campaign on easy?
She's still working on movement and being able to use both sticks at the same time. And okay. I remember when I was playing Halo, I got super frustrated because I didn't know how to use both sticks at the same time. So I'm trying to ease her into it.
I was the same way, and how I learned is I started playing campaign. The original Halo CE, I probably went through the easy campaign 10 times before I switched to normal.
Okay, I might do that.
You know, once I could make it through easy with a minimal amount of deaths, like, you know, 1 or 2, then I figured, okay, well, I'll move up to normal.
Fair enough.
And then when I could do that with normal, I moved it up to heroic. Or, well, you know, from heroic to legendary, then it was just kind of like, well, legendary is going to be a grind, but I'll do it anyway.
And now legendary for us is like, this is kind of hard, but it's doable.
I don't know. That Halo 2 campaign on legendary, it's still a beast.
Oh, it's definitely something that's not, you don't laugh at, but
Grunt Funeral is your friend.
We at least know how to combat it. It's just actually being successful at combating it.
Pro tip, if you're playing it on Xbox One, Grunt Funeral, it is your friend.
And also noob combo.
Just remember, big boom. Every single grunt. Big boom.
Giant boom.
So shoot grunt, run. Yeah, it's I remember the first time I completed Cario Station on Legendary. That was 10 years after the game launched, I think. No, 8 years after the game launched, I got it. I had actually got a PC version, and I beat it on the PC version, and then I went back and played it on console and finally beat it on console.
Dang.
Yeah, up until just a few years ago, I had not completed Halo 2's campaign completely on Legendary except for, well, I'd completed on Legendary except for Cario Station. I never could get past the second shuttle day. It was a grind to get past the first one. The second one, I just never could get past it. And I found an interesting little trick to doing the second shuttle bay on Lazo.
Oh, really? What's that?
You can actually, well, you become really good friends with a crate.
Okay.
When you enter the second shuttle bay, first thing you do is kill the 2 grunts on the plasma turrets. Then you jump up on top of the catwalk, and there's a large box. Now, you'll have to look up the video on it, and there's probably multiple videos on it, but you have to place that large box in a certain point behind one of the turrets. It needs to be far enough over to one side that you can still get the get on turret button, but not so far that it doesn't cover you up. Basically, what happens is you glitch inside the crate, and since the enemies can't see you, they won't shoot at you.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's good.
And a lot of times the elites will just stand there and let you shoot them.
Wow. That's clever.
And believe it or not, that mission on Lazo, well, if you do it like you're supposed to, it's a pain.
Oh, yeah. It's easily the hardest mission in the entire Halo campaign is Cairo Station. If not one of the hardest missions in the entire Halo campaign is Cairo Station.
But the one of the tricks is to bring Sergeant Johnson with you. That's a challenge. That's almost as hard as beating the level on Lazo.
Are you scooting him along? How do you bring him along with you?
Well, the first thing you need to do is find an energy sword, which if you stick an elite with a grenade, certain elites, they will rage and drop their plasma rifle or whatever and pull out their sword. And then you make sure that Johnson is near, and that elite will focus on Johnson, and then you come up and backsmack him to get the sword. But you use the sword to move Johnson along because he's invincible. You can't kill him in Halo 2. So you basically use the sword to move Johnson through the level. And you have to be careful because he wants to go back to the beginning of the level. So at certain points, you kind of need to put up a kitty gate to keep him from running all the way back to the beginning. Like what the first big atrium that you get in. Once you get him in there, he'll stay kind of in that area. He won't necessarily run all the way back, but you kind of got to take the crates and stuff and build a child gate for him so he doesn't run too far back.
That's funny.
But the idea is to use Johnson for bait.
Okay.
Seeing that he's invincible, and at your first opportunity, you want to give him a plasma rifle. Because, for one, if he's got the plasma rifle, he can do enough damage that he can take the shields off of an elite. It just takes a little bit of time. But the trick is to, get the elites to focus on him, and then you can sneak around behind him, and you do have to sneak. You can't just charge up and backsmack him to kill him. There are plenty of Lazo guides out there. You ever want to attempt it or are thinking about attempting it, look up the video first.
Okay.
And there's 10 minutes on a subject we didn't even know we were going to talk about.
I know. Okay. So I think that wraps it up mostly for the night. Halo Wars 2 Blitz beta continues on until the 30th. And again, we want to hear your stories, so make sure you send in the submissions to submissions@podtackler.com, and we'll be giving away one of the new Jinx Halo Wars 2 t-shirts in response to whoever sends it in, and we'll pick one, whoever sends it in, maybe the best one, or maybe random, depends on how good we see of the submissions. But make sure you send those in, and we'll read them out on the show next week. Also, make sure you are staying tuned to our social media. We'll probably be sending out some more of those Prima guide codes. So they're good for redeeming the e-guide. You just go to primagames.com and you'll redeem them there. We also have some physical guides that we'll be giving away. And then, of course, we have tomorrow the Halo Bowl, the second Halo Bowl. And we're playing again for Gamers Outreach. We're raising funds to fund another go-kart. Hopefully we can raise enough funds to fund a full go-kart this time. We got about halfway last time, and we're introducing two new podcasts to the mix, the Bad Halo podcast and the Let's Talk Halo podcast. So there's a total of six that we'll be playing tomorrow. Drunken Halo is the reigning champions, so we'll be looking to take them down. And we have our same roster as last year. We have myself, Keys EG, Dusk Xander, and Itanium. So make sure you come on over. We'll be hosting the stream. The stream is going to be hosted by Mudcats, who's going to be the commentator. It's X_Mudcat_X. But all of the podcast channels will be hosting his channel. So if you go to twitch.com/podtacular, you'll be able to watch the carnage there as well. And it starts at 6:30 p.m. Again, for those, I'm not sure if I'll get this out tonight, but if not, it'll be starting at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It'll probably go for at least 6 hours. We tried to adjust how we're doing the round robin and then the bracket play to make sure we kind of fit in the same amount of time as we did last year. So hopefully only take about 6 hours to get done. We have 5 round robins, which is going to be best of threes, and then that'll determine the top four placement, and then it'll go into bracket play, which will be best of fives, and then the finals will be best of seven. So make sure you're coming on over, supporting us, and then make sure you check out halobowl.com, where you can find the fundraising page over at Gamers Outreach and support them through the Halo Bowl. Make sure you also check out our podcast network. We're part of a group of gaming-specific podcasts, including Critcast, which is a TF2 podcast, Guardian Radio, which is a Destiny podcast, Podcast 76, which is a Overwatch podcast, and The Learning Cliff, which is an EVE Online podcast. And then there's a couple of miscellaneous ones called How to Murder Time and why am I forgetting?
You haven't done The Learning Cliff yet.
No, The Learning Cliff is the EVE Online one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Never mind.
Work in progress and How to Murder Time. So you can check that out over at thepodcast.com, and that's podcast with a K, or you can go to podka.st, and that will take you there as well. Make sure you're following us on all of our social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, Instagram, YouTube, Discord, all that fun stuff. Make sure you check out our videos that we posted regarding the Blitz gameplay, and we have a deathmatch, domination, and campaign 1 and campaign 3 gameplay videos up on our YouTube channel. And we have a whole Halo Wars 2 preview playlist that you can watch all 10 videos there. And I know Godzilla T has been streaming some of his stuff, so make sure you're subscribed to our Twitch channels as well and our social media, and you'll be able to watch some of our Halo Wars 2 footage. So best of luck to all the podcasts tomorrow for the Halo Bowl number 2. And may the better podcast prevail. And for everyone listening to us, thank you for downloading us through iTunes or Zoom or Google Play Podcasts or however you downloaded us. Thank you for tuning into the show. Hope to hear some great submissions from you guys regarding your experience with Halo Wars 2. So let us know how that goes, and we will see you all next week. Thanks, everyone, and keep on fragging Blitz. We'll just keep it that way. Keep on fragging Blitz.